If you, who make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
Of the tax man.
Make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime. $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
One single dime. Liar in chief, Barack Obama, promising you that under his plan, if you make less than $100,000 a year, you will not see your taxes increase one dime. How many people who make less than $100,000 a year buy utilities? How many people that make less than $100,000 a year buy cigarettes? How many people that make less than $100,000 a year buy a pickup truck? Yep, that's right. So here we are tonight on the Fair Tax Show. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Fair Tax. We're going to do this on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock Missouri time. That's Central Daylight Savings Time. We're going to do this until we get it right. We're going to do this until we get a tax system that is fair, a tax system that is not corrupt, a tax system that does not lend itself to power politics, and a tax system that in and of itself is an economic driver for the re-expansion of the most prosperous country in the history of the world. Now, last time we met, we had a caller. And I want to tell you a little bit about this, how this went, if you didn't hear the show. And if you didn't hear the show, it would behoove you to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, look at the podcast, and click back on that show and listen. Now, I need to tell you, in the first hour, half hour, maybe 45 minutes, however long this takes, we're not going to take calls. We're going to deal with what came up. I will tell you that I let this caller go. I don't have a call screener. That's good and it's bad. I mean, I'm here by myself in the studio. I don't have someone to field calls. That's bad because it means that once in a while I click on a caller who just starts ranting and raving a bunch of curse words and I have to shut him off. Fortunately, we're not over-the-air radio. And so there's not a lot of beeps there. You get to hear these idiot socialists in all their splendor. But it's good in that we actually get a little controversy here. I don't only let through the people who say, Dave, you're a great American, to start their dialogue. Some people say, Dave, you're not a great American, and then we hear what they have to say that makes them a great American. But that's what's great about America, isn't it? Everyone, regardless of how crazy their opinion, gets a chance to say what it is. So anyway, this feller called in, let's start by saying he called from a state that is ranked consistently in the top 10 for standard of living, in the top 10 for economic expansion, and a state that has eliminated the income tax and replaced it 100% with a sales tax, the state of Tennessee. He called a retired accountant to let me know that what's been good for the state of Tennessee is not good for the rest of us. And he had some points about the fair tax that are based on things he's heard, obviously, from someone's talking points, or things that he has studied and is intentionally trying to mislead you with. First of all, we talked about the prebate. The prebate is a place that socialists and income taxers, let's call them socialists, because where did the income tax start? It started with socialism. It started with Marxism. The whole class warfare thing started with demonizing the wealthy and with taxing their income to pay for the society, for the social structure. And our income tax is rapidly headed in the direction of that income tax, where we pay taxes for nothing more, no more service, for nothing more, really, than to support the lifestyle of those who collect the taxes. You know, in the Soviet Union, they collected taxes and used it to buy DACOs in the big, expensive, fancy houses on the Crimean for the Politburo members. They collected all of the money, basically, like the song says, and used it to assign apartments to government employees. Basically, the governed took all of the money for themselves. Or the governors took all of the money for themselves from the governed, I'm sorry. But anyway, so this guy is from Tennessee, a state that has thrived immensely from simply eliminating income tax and relying on sales tax. And he called to first say that the prebate was a massive welfare program, that we had gone through a exercise. We'd done all the math. We'd showed you point for point for point how a woman working for minimum wage, unmarried mother, single mom with two kids, was going to come out $5,000 a year better off under the fair tax than she was otherwise. And he said, well, yeah, but that's because she gets a prebate. And a prebate is nothing but welfare. Someone other than her is paying that prebate. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to close your eyes for just a moment and breathe. Do a breathing exercise with me so that we can relax, because you've either just heard me say that and you're irate at the idiocy of it, or you believe it and you need to relax to get into a state of mind where you can understand simple logic here. Let's let this woman work the first month of the fair tax without any prebate. Okay? Then at the end of that month, let's send her the same check that we've always talked about, and let's call that a rebate of the tax that she's paid. Let's call that returning to her some of her own money that she paid out in the past month. Define that for me as welfare. Now, you could define that as welfare, or as in somebody else paid that bill. If it weren't for the fact that a single mother with two children making $740,000 a year gets the exact same check. The tax is fair, after all. I know that that's going to make you poor people feel like you're being slighted somehow because the rich guy is getting a prebate too. The same prebate as you if you're in the same circumstances that you're not getting over. But everyone, every American is getting a rebate of the tax that they pay for the basic essential living needs of their family. Every single adult with two kids gets the same amount. Every couple with four kids gets the same amount as every other couple with four kids. Every single mother with 19 children by 14 different fathers gets the same check as every single mother with 19 children who's widowed. Well, I was going to say widowed at a young age, but if she's got 19 children, she sure as hell ain't too young, is she? Anyway, there we go. That's the fairness. And just imagine. In fact, let's just do that exercise. Let's just let her suffer for a month and then make it a rebate, a tax refund, just like the tax refund you get now. Except the tax refund you get now isn't fair. It's not based on your circumstances. It's based on how many loopholes you can find. It's based on how much you can corrupt the system or how much the system has been corrupted in your favor. Let's make it fair. Let's call it a rebate instead of a prebate. Now, your argument that this is a welfare system is shot all to hell. Now your point that someone else is paying her bills goes out the window. So with that in mind, well, let's go back and give her a prebate. Let's go back and give her the tax she's going to spend this month in advance and help her out, without hurting anyone else, without taking money from anyone else. Let's return to her her money. That sound fair? Now, the guy goes on to contend that part of what we... Well, first of all, the next thing he did was he threw in the 30% thing, and yes, you know, if you, it is a 23% tax. It's a 23% tax just like your income tax is. You pay 25% income tax. That income tax is the percent of the money that you make. So if you say, I pay 25% tax, then 25% of what you make, you pay. If you say, I pay a 23% sales tax, then 23% of what you spend is tax. So it's a 23% tax. Don't try to play word games with it. It's a 23% sales tax. Now, but they want to say that's not the way we do sales tax. What we do is you go to the counter, you buy a candy bar for a dollar, and there's a 6% sales tax. You pay 6 cents. So using that formula, it's a 30% tax. Well, first of all, we don't use that formula. It's a 23% sales tax. But to appease you all, we recognized the formulation. We exceeded that was a plausible way to formulate it. And we used 30% when we saved the single mom with two kids $5,000 a year. We used 30%, remember? 30% is what we used to figure her tax. So you haven't pulled one over on us by making her pay more tax than we already figured in our example. Now, he went on to say that, got to put my glasses on here, that we were dreaming if we thought that when you stop taxing corporations, 22% of every penny you pay, that is 22 cents of every dollar you pay for retail goods and services, is tax to the federal government, to all the corporations. In other words, you're already paying a 22% sales tax. 22 cents of every dollar you spend is tax for all the corporations that made the loaf of bread you buy, that made the wrapper for the loaf of bread you buy, that made the little twisty tie that goes around the wrapper on the little loaf of bread that you buy. Not just corporate income tax, but the half of all of the laborers' Social Security and Medicare tax that's paid, 22 cents of every dollar you spend on retail goods and services, and it's actually a little higher on services, a little lower on goods, it all comes out to average about 22 cents on the dollar, is taxed to the federal government. That goes away now, or let's not jump the gun here. Corporations are no longer taxed under the fair tax. So the bread maker isn't taxed, the wheat farmer isn't taxed, the person who sells diesel to the wheat farmer's tractor isn't taxed, the people who drive the bread from the factory to the warehouse aren't taxed, the retailer's not taxed, the warehouse isn't taxed. Nobody along the way is taxed. And so it's our contention that the price of a loaf of bread comes down 22%. The price of a doctor visit comes down 22%. The price of a car comes down 22%. Before tax now, let's be fair. Before tax, it comes down 22%. Well, you can't guarantee me that, says Mr. Tennessee. Well, I'll tell you what. You know less about business, less about corporate America, and less about capitalist competition to say that it won't go away than you do to say that it will go away. So let's just put it like that. I mean, yeah, the case hasn't been tried. We don't know the facts, but we do know this. We do know this. Time after time after time in the past, when the federal government has relieved an entity of tax, the competition has caused the price of goods to come down. Most recently, the Congress, in an error, allowed the airline ticket tax to expire. Within a week, airline ticket prices had reduced by the amount of the tax. Not long after that, Congress woke up to their mistake, missed the money in their pockets, reinstituted the tax, and the price of airline tickets went back up. Here we go. Here we go. Just imagine the reverse, like we did on the other one, on the other example. Imagine that the Hershey Candy Bar Company and the Mars Candy Bar Company both get a new tax next week, a candy bar tax of 12%. How long before the price of both candy bars goes up 12%? Now, do you think for a minute that when we take that tax away, both those companies don't want to keep that 12% in their pocket? But don't you also think that Hershey will say, damn, we can really expand our market share if we come down 8 cents, 8%, and still keep 4 cents, 4%? Well, let's do it. Let's just take over the candy bar market. Well, what's going to happen then? Market share is the driving factor in a free market society. Market share is the driving factor in a competitive environment. Market share will demand that the price of that product come down to a point that the business plan profit is being realized. It will happen. Close your eyes. Take a couple of deep breaths. And think. When one gas station goes down a penny, how many minutes until every station in town is down a penny? Until one goes down 2 pennies. How many minutes after that before everyone else is down that penny too? That's not apples and oranges. That's apples and apples. Brothers and sisters, that's watermelons and watermelons. The guy then goes on to say that, to contend that the fair tax demands that if I go to a yard sale and buy a TV, that I be ready to prove to the fair tax enforcers, he called them, that I bought that used. Now, let me just say that sounds ludicrous on its face, and it is. Here's how it works. If I set up a booth at the flea market, and I sell knockoff fragrances that I purchased from a wholesaler, the burden is on me, the seller, and me, the seller alone. I can go one of two ways. I can sell that and charge a retail sales tax by registering myself with the state as a retail seller, a collector of sales tax. If I do that, and only if I do that, can I go to the wholesaler and buy the item I am reselling without paying a sales tax. I can buy that item as a registered retailer without paying a sales tax. If I want to sell the product without charging a quote-unquote sales tax, I can go to the wholesaler, not a registered retailer, and I can buy as much perfume as I want, but I have to pay the sales tax. It then is only fair, remember this is a fair tax, that I sell that product without charging a further tax. The fair tax taxes every bottle of knockoff perfume one time and one time only. It taxes every automobile, every home, every candy bar, and every loaf of bread one time and one time only. And it taxes it at the point where someone bought it last, tax-free. That person is responsible for collecting the sales tax and paying it to the state of Missouri, who then in turn pays it to the federal government for a fee. That's not complicated. It can be made to sound complicated if you want to try to muddy the water. It can be made to sound complicated if you want to try to make an argument that the fair thing to do in this country is to tax people's hard work through their income. If you want to make a case that the fair thing to do in this country is to then tax them another 22% on every loaf of bread they buy and hide that as though it were a corporate tax, then it can be made to sound pretty complicated, but it's not that complicated. I can go and buy new cars from Detroit, either tax-free as a registered retailer, or I can buy as many cars as I want from Detroit, pay the sales tax, and then sell them without a quote-unquote sales tax. Of course, I'm selling them with a sales tax because that tax is then hidden in the price, just like it is today. But the fair tax taxes everything one time and one time only. So the definition of used is something that's already had the sales tax paid on it, period. It is that simple. And you don't pay tax on used items. Once something's had the sales tax paid on it, it will never have tax paid on it again. And then, of course, he goes on to make his case for the flat tax. And this is where we find out that this guy is a retired accountant. Now, I told you in show number one that one of the chief groups of people that are going to fight the fair tax are tax lawyers and accountants. They make their living off this muddy, muddy tax code. And even at that, they haven't got a clue. Even at that, if you take the same income tax return to 10 accountants, you get 10 different answers. If you take this batch of papers at the end of the year and lay them on 10 accountants' desks, you get back 10 different tax returns. It's that complex. And those 10 people giving you 10 different answers make their living off this thing. So he goes on to say that he's got a plan to fund the government on a flat tax of 10%. A modified corporate income tax that allows deductions only for legitimate business expenses. the kind of legitimate business expenses that he says justifiably allowed General Electric to pay zero income tax. While Western Electric and Sylvania had to pay huge income taxes. Those kind of business deductions, legitimate business deductions. And we questioned him about that. We questioned him about the GE, and he said, yes, those would still be allowed. Those kinds of deductions would still be allowed. GE Money Bank is where GE lost their shitload of money that allowed them to pay no income tax. So, what's wrong with that? Well, the first problem is that I want to see some math. I'm prepared to show you the math. I'm prepared to show you the math that a 23% sounds like a lot, a 23% sales tax replacing income tax, payroll tax, estate tax, alternative minimum tax, and some other tax. I can't even remember what all the five taxes are that get replaced, but they're taxes that hit you. And corporate tax. That a flat 23% sales tax to replace all those taxes is revenue neutral. By revenue neutral, if you've just joined us, we mean the government makes the same amount of money the day after the fair tax goes into effect that they made the day before the fair tax goes into effect. I want to see the math that says a country that's paying an average right now of 14.5% income tax, and I say average, to average that out between from the incomes that are paying zero to the incomes that are paying 25% to 35%. An average of 14.5% plus a 35% corporate tax, I want to see that revenue neutral on a 10% flat income tax. You can't do it. You can't do it. If you can, you show me on paper. You can't do it. Now, he goes on to say that you probably can't do it. What we need to do is make this a 10% flat tax and reduce government spending. And now we're back to show number one again. The fair tax is not about spending. The fair tax is about how we collect tax. That's all it is. It's about how we collect tax. We're all about cutting government spending. Every one of us is about cutting government spending. Cut government spending, cut government spending, cut government spending. Quit borrowing money, cut government spending. Quit printing money, cut government spending. Cut government spending to the constitutional functions of the United States government. Great. Now, I give you his 10% income tax to pay for that government versus a 6% sales tax. Not 23%. We've cut government spending to the bare bones. He now needs a 10% income tax flat across the board. And I need a 6% sales tax. Fine. I'll put my plan up against his still, and I'll put it up against his for one outstanding reason. It's not about how much. It's not even really about how. It's about what. We started talking about the fair tax with one statement, and that is, it is counterproductive, it is counter-liberty to tax income, period. It is evil to tax income. Taxes are evil. Yes. Yes. That's the big comeback you get when you say it's evil to tax income. Taxes are a necessary evil. It is anti-liberty and it is anti-productivity to tax income. To tax property, for that matter. What business has it ever been of you, my next door neighbor, or most of all, the federal government, how much I make or how much I have? Well, what I make and what I have ain't much, but it ain't none of their damn business if it is much. It ain't none of their damn business if it isn't much. So there we go. There in a nutshell is the whole last 2 hour show. Let's take the poor little lady with two children and let's give her her money back. It's fair and it's not welfare. It's her damn money. Let's bring prices down to an almost break-even point with the fair tax by eliminating this double taxation on American consumers hidden in the price of everything they buy. My God, it's a politician's dream come true to have a bunch of socialist liberals saying, oh, yes, yes, let's tax the corporations. Tax me less and tax the corporations more. When the politician sits there promising to do so and knowing that he's just taxing you more through the corporations, hidden in the price of a loaf of bread you gotta buy. Not only are we not going to hide any federal tax in the price of a loaf of bread, but we're not even going to tax you for the loaf of bread. If you got to buy it, we're going to give you that tax back. And we're still going to break even. And you're still going to have more money at the end of the year. And when you go get your paycheck on Friday, you're still going to get everything you've got coming to you. If you work 40 hours a week for $10 an hour, they're going to put $400 in your hand. Let's tax everything one time and one time only. So let's not tax used things. And let's stop talking about how fair a flat tax is. It's more of the same old crap. It's a tax on income. That takes care of Mr. Tennessee, the accountant from a state that's thriving, that's topping the country in standard of living and in economic expansion, in attracting business and doing so by eliminating the income tax and surviving.
Thank you. calling it anything else. I mean, it is a tax. So it and it's a fairly regressive tax. An awful lot of people in Iowa and in Oregon and Washington and Utah and places where we are, they're very poor people. They're going to pay a lot more money for electricity.
If you make under $250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single cent.
Brain.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And sometimes they call 347-677-1835. You're welcome to call. Brains or no brains, we take them all. And we'll be glad to talk to you about the fair tax. So here we are, again, talking about replacing all the other taxes that most of us pay with one single consumption tax of 23%. We're not going to play this up as something that it's not. We're going to talk about the history of the income tax and the okay, excuse us. We're having some technical difficulties here with Blog Talk Radio. We started this whole series by giving you a thanks, Tom, by giving you a history of the income tax, by showing you how the income tax had been introduced as a tax on the wealthy. I mean, that was what it was sold to the American public as, a tax on the wealthy. It was sold right into the class warfare environment. And it was at first a tax on the wealthy. You had to make the equivalent of over $50,000 today before you paid any tax at all. But very quickly, the government got hungrier and hungrier and bigger, and that tax crept down to almost everyone. We talked about how we need to avoid taxing income and property. You know, a friend of mine calls property tax your lease to the government. He says that how can you even say you own your house if you have to pay a property tax on it? If you don't pay the property tax, the government comes and repossesses your house, just like the bank would if you didn't pay your mortgage. So you don't really own your own damn house, do you, if you have to pay a property tax on it? Further, the whole income and property tax notion is designed in a way to put the government and just about anybody else who wants to do it. We've recently found out right in the middle of your business, right in the middle of how much money you make, of how much money you save, of how much money you spend, right in the middle of how much property you own, how you own it, what you do with it. All of these taxes are part of the government's control over you. Further, the income tax is used to directly control you. If you act this way that we don't approve of, we will tax you. And if you act this way that we do approve of, we'll give you a tax break. To claim that the income tax in and of itself is not the first shot in class warfare is to have your head in the sand. The whole thing is bizarre to me that anyone could continue to defend this system, either as part of a flat tax, in any way that anyone could defend taxing income as a way of improving the system we use to tax income. I mean, any tax code improvement has to completely eliminate the idea of taxing your hard work, of taxing your property, of taxing what you have, then to argue that a national sales tax, a national consumption tax, is regressive is the next step that any socialist will take. See, regressive has taken on such it's such a trigger word that they get to throw out there. They get to throw out the word regressive, and all of a sudden everyone cringes because everyone who hears it falls into the trap of believing that everything has to be measured by how much you make and how much you have. We're forgetting. We're going to completely wipe from our minds the notion of how much do you have and how much do I have. When you can do that, you are ready to talk about fairness. You can't even think about fairness as long as you are affixed on what I have and what you have, and what Warren Buffett has, and what Warren Buffett's secretary has, and what millionaires and billionaires have, and what poor people who work at McDonald's have. Until you can remove yourself from being fixated on what people have or don't have, you can't talk about what's fair in the way of taxation. Until you can remove yourself from what people have and what people don't have, you can't talk about fair taxation. You are immersed in class. You are immersed in wealth envy. It's not your fault. My God, you were raised that way. It's what our society is built on. You know, it's not built anymore. And we're talking about 2, 3, 4 generations now that are not built on a foundation of, I can work, I can make myself better, without regard to what everyone else has. There's a drive in America now, not to make myself better, but to make myself better than the other guy. And that leads to a wealth envy, that leads to a class warfare, to a class structure. I'm going to get away from that word class warfare, because it's as much a trigger word as regressive. It's as much a word to inflame the discussion as the word regressive. So I just want to talk about class. America used to be a classless society. You know, I flash back to something that Barack Obama said that caused a big kerfuffle about 2 years ago. About a year ago, I'm sorry. When he said, if you are successful, you didn't do that. Remember that. And all of the big kerfuffle and all of the big heartache and all of the big discussion was about the fact that this guy said that if you're successful, you didn't do that on your own. That he helped you do it, that the government helped you do it. And that's bad. And it's inexcusable for a president of the United States to even think like that, let alone to say it out loud. But I want to tell you what struck me in that goes directly to what we're talking about here. And that wasn't the word, you didn't do that, words, you didn't do that. It was the word successful. You see, in this country today, you aren't successful unless you're one of those guys in that class up there. If you are successful, you didn't do that on your own. If you own a business, you didn't do that on your own. If you're the big boss, if you're the millionaire or billionaire, you're successful. My God, I'm going to tell you what. My grandpa was born to a broke man and grew up broke and worked hard delivering milk on a milk truck, starting with a horse-drawn milk wagon and ending with some kind of a six-cylinder slant milk truck that carried around the milk on ice, because they didn't have refrigerated trucks in those days, and raised two kids, and bought a house, and ended his life a little better off than he entered it, and left behind two children with a work ethic who ended their lives a little bit better than they started them, and passed that work ethic off to their... You want to talk about successful. You want to talk about successful people who did it all by themselves. We've so redefined the term successful because of our fixation on class. That's what offended me about the president's little thing. If you are successful, hell, you've got $1 million, or you're not successful. And if you've got $1 million, you didn't do that on your own. Tell my grandpa he didn't do that on his own. Tell him he wasn't successful. Tell that single mother of two that we talked about in our example 2 weeks ago, that ends up $5,000 a year better off under the fair tax, and raises two kids without any help from me and you, on a minimum wage job, tell her she's not successful. If you're successful, my ass. So what causes that? What causes that kind of redefinition? What causes that is just exactly what we've been talking about. Our fixation on class. So now, if you're in this class, you're not successful. And if you're in that class, you are successful. And it's only a very small step till we get to a point where we expect that class to pay its fair share. So this class doesn't have to pay anything. I've got a very, very good friend who's all about this cut income tax from the bottom up. First of all, that starts with the premise that it's okay to tax income. And secondly, it ends with the premise that it's fair for to take money away from one person and give it to another person. Oh, no, 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 no. Wait, wait, wait. He's not in favor of any level of welfare. Any level of welfare. He doesn't want to give any money to anyone. He just wants to take the money to run the government from one class of people and leave the other class alone. How is that not taking from one and giving to another? Do I not get government services? Do I not get defended by the same military as Warren Buffett? Do I not get the same national parks as Warren Buffett? So how am I not taking from Warren Buffett if he's paying for it all? It's not just money going from one hand to another. It's the whole system. How are you not taking money from one person and giving it to another just simply by buying the government services and giving them to another person? So we come up with this idea that to be fair, everyone ought to pay a flat tax for anything they buy over and above the necessary expenses of living and raising a family. No one pays tax. Ooh, that just gripes the shit out of the lower class, doesn't it? No one, even Warren Buffett, doesn't pay taxes for bread and butter and meat and electricity. We give him a prebate too. Let's be fair. And so, it's not a regressive tax, which is where we started this part of the discussion. It's a flat tax. Forget about how much you make. You gotta. You want to. You really want to. You want to get away from the stress of he has more than me. You really do. You want that life that allows you to build on you. You want that life that allows you to be successful based on your terms. That doesn't make you less of a success because you're not like him. You want that life. You deserve that life as an American. We live in a country founded on that life. Your success belongs to you. And you can't reach that pinnacle until you are ready, willing, and able to leave class behind. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. We encourage you to call and get involved in this discussion. 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. I'm off for a breather.
To fight for sense of fear too small. Be thankful I don't take it all.
If you make under $250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single dime.
It specifically said that it is not constitutional under the Commerce Clause. They said it is constitutional under the tax. And as to the question about raising taxes for the middle class, if I may, sir, let's just look at the record. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that in 2016, 4 million Americans will pay the mandate penalty or tax. 75% of those people will make less than $120,000 a year. And the CBO says between 2012 and 2021, those folks will pay $27 billion in additional taxes.
Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
On September 15, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia took up debate on whether or not to allow amendments to the new Constitution and, if so, what method of amending should be adopted. Initially, it was proposed that only the legislature could make an amendment. Quoting from James Madison's notes of that very day, Colonel Mason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the nodes to depend in the first immediately, in the second ultimately, on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. Unquote. There followed a strenuous debate and many propositions, motions, votes, and refinements that arrived at the article as it exists today, giving states and the people the power to meet to amend the Constitution with no regard for the legislature or executive. The time that Mason foresaw, the time of oppressive national government, has arrived. Join us on Monday night in the Hour of Truth as we explore this method of peaceful revolution. We'll discuss how, when, and why. And we will be glad to hear your opinions on exactly what we need to do to fix the issues we face today, using Article 5 of the Constitution. Can we? Will we take our government by the horns, wrestle it to the ground, and return our republic to a government that serves the states and the people? Let's talk about it. Mondays, 7 p.m., the Hour of a Truth. Call and participate on the studio line 347-677-1835.
I've got a feeling that the night is turning. His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I didn't see any method at all.
I wonder if you knew it would turn your
Okay, we're back. This is the Fair Tax Show. It's Monday night. It's the Hour of Truth, and I'm Dave. I want to take a minute here before we get back to our discussion tonight. And if you want to call in and get involved, it's 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. I want to thank Missouri Grassroots Coalition. They own this time slot between 7 and 9, Monday through Sunday, 7 nights a week. I want to thank them for the time that they give me on Saturdays for the Fair Tax Show, and on Mondays for the Article 5 show. We have a great show coming up on Monday. We're going to continue our discussion of Article 5. We got a dynamic guest coming up. Listen on Tuesdays on this same time slot. Cynthia Davis comes along with Homefront. What a great show. What a fine entertainer Cynthia is. Wednesday, Lisa Payne Nager with The Culture Vigilante. She has some great guests. One of my favorites, Tom, was along last week, and Tom Martz, I think, will probably be making appearances every once in a while as the legislative session gets rolling again here in the next couple of months. Tom belongs to Locke and Smith Society, and they measure legislation and how constitutional it is in the state of Missouri. He's always a guest. He's a kind of a regular on Lisa's show. And then she has some other things going on. She's kind of an education expert. She's a homeschooler herself, successfully got her kids through the homeschool and into college. And we're proud of her and what she stands for. Mike Evans is going to be joining us on Thursday nights. And then we have an exciting new guest coming along on Friday nights, and we'll be making that announcement here in the next couple of days. We're growing, we're expanding, we're making this thing work. Missouri Grassroots Coalition has, I want to get in one more plug here, only one thing only, that they collect any money for, and that is the Secret Santa. You heard the promo earlier in the show for the Secret Santa. I'm not gonna go nuts on it tonight. Secret Santa is a thing we do every Christmas. We go around to department stores throughout the state of Missouri. We find layaways with toys exclusively that haven't been paid off by Christmas Eve, that are severely behind, that aren't going to be under the tree on Christmas morning. We pay them off. We get a hold of some parents and we call and tell them to come down and pick up their kids' Christmas. We don't challenge their politics. We don't preach. We don't care why. We just do it. I think that's the spirit of Christmas. We thank you, our listeners, our members, members and not of Missouri Grassroots Coalition, who gave over $1,000 last year. We've doubled our goal this year. I'm going to be honest with you, we're a little bit behind. We need your help. We're a little bit behind where we were this time last year. We spend the whole year trying to collect. We start in February of each year and work right up through Christmas Eve. And the reason we do that is we know darn good and well that it's virtually impossible for us to come to you begging for money in November and December. So we try to make it easy on you. We try to make it easy on us. We ask you now, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button, and drop a couple of bucks in there using the PayPal, or there's an address there if you don't feel comfortable with PayPal, but click on that PayPal button, send us a few dollars for the Secret Santa. Every dime goes right to the cause. There's no overhead at all, and we want your help with that. Okay, we're back now. We're back to the fair tax, a national 23% sales tax to replace everything else. Now, one of the other arguments that I keep hearing, and I want to deal with it head on, and I want to tell you what my proposal is. This goes right along with our Monday night show, in fact. the Article 5 thing, is that H.R. 25, I agree, is a little bit lacking in the way it approaches this. Some credible argument can be made that H.R. 25 does not go far enough to ensuring that the income tax is repealed before we institute the fair tax. In fact, H.R. 25 does institute the fair tax alongside the income tax and stipulates that if by a certain date the income tax in the form of Amendment 16 hasn't been repealed, that the fair tax will sunset. I don't like that. And I agree with that criticism of H.R. 25. I would rather see the fair tax implemented as a constitutional amendment itself that repeals 16 and replaces it with the fair tax all in one fell swoop. And I feel very confident that we could get the requisite three-quarters of the states to sign on to that. The fair tax is becoming more and more popular, especially with the abuses that the IRS has seen. And this, and IRS abuse is one of the chief arguments against this flat tax movement. The flat tax movement that's catching on now, thank you, Ted Cruz, is a Save the IRS movement. So yes, I'll agree with the criticism that says H.R. 25 is bad bill. Now we don't argue for or against H.R. 25 on the Fair Tax Show, because H.R. 25 is not the fair tax. First of all, H.R. 25 is not going to survive any more than anything else does the way it's written. If it ever got out of committee, it would go to the floor for amendment and debate. It would then go to the Senate for amendment and debate, where it would come back to the House for concurrence and or amendment and or debate. And I caution us that we have got to keep an eye on that process as it happens, because it could become something totally different than what we would like to see as all this goes on. But I do have to allow for the fact that H.R. 25 falls well short of what we want with respect to eliminating the income tax before we move to the fair tax. I would like to see both happen at the same time. I would like to see both happen in the way of a constitutional amendment. I would like to see the fair tax in concrete, exactly the way the income tax has been for the last almost 100 years. And so I'm conceding that point now, and it's because of that that I don't argue for H.R. 25. I bring that up because that, if you go back and listen to the show of 2 weeks ago where all of the points that I made in the first hour came from, you'll hear us discussing H.R. 25. I do not argue for H.R. 25. I argue for the fair tax. Now, how, critics go on to say, is it that the fair tax is going to be a vehicle for economic expansion? And if you're here tonight and you're already on the fair tax wagon, I don't want to lose you, because this is so clearly apparent that if you know anything about the fair tax, I'm really preaching to the choir. This is so basic that if you know anything about the fair tax, you already get it. This country taxes business to foreign countries. I don't mean we tax business going to foreign countries. We tax business into going to foreign countries. We have a 35% corporate tax on top of a 50% levy on employers of all Social Security and Medicare tax, on top of all the cost that industry pays to pay the tax, to abide by the rules of the tax, to avoid when they can the tax, along with the cost to businesses of all the business decisions that are made that should be made some other way because of the tax consequences of the decision being made. And company after company after company is folding up and going to friendlier locations to do business. Now, what if a company could come to the United States of America instead of fleeing the United States of America? What if they could come here and do business without paying a corporate tax, without paying a penalty for making money, without paying a penalty for employing people? What do you mean penalty for employing people? They employ people to make money? No, they don't. They pay a penalty for employing people. Do you know that a $10 an hour employee costs the average employer $14.50 an hour? A $10 an hour employee costs an employer $14.50 an hour. And I'm just talking about the government mandated crap. I'm not talking about health insurance or benefits. I'm talking about half of the social, you know, take out your pay stub. Take out your pay stub with me. Look at it. You see that thing there that says FICA? That's Social Security. See, your employer pays that much too. Whatever that number is there, your employer paid that. And not just for you, for the other 340 people that work there. See that part that says Medicare tax? Whatever that number is, your employer paid exactly that same amount. And not just for you, for every employee that works there. That's aside from 35% of all the profit to the federal government. That's aside from the accountants and the payroll clerks and the, now with Obamacare, the benefit clerks. That's aside from every boardroom decision that was made after consulting with lawyers and tax accountants, and decisions that were made based solely on the tax consequences of the decision rather than what's good for the business. I mean, hell, you'd go somewhere else too. These aren't evil, greedy capitalists. They're prudent business people. They're people who answer to stockholders. They're people who work for a living, just like you and me. Except they've got someone trying to steal that living from them as quickly as they make it. And then they're paying someone else to try to keep that from happening. Yeah, I'd go somewhere else too. Now, what if none of that existed? What if none of that excessive cost of doing business existed in the United States of America? What if we were the only country in the world where you could come, set up a shop, employ people, make stuff, ship stuff overseas, and not be penalized a bit for doing so? My gosh, you want to talk about an end to the unemployment problem? You want to talk about making the labor force a market again, about making labor a marketable commodity? You want to talk about companies tripping over one another to get here and compete with companies that want to stay here? You know the number one thing that a business looks for when they decide where they're going to go is an infrastructure. We have that. We have that better than anybody else in the world. The other thing that they look for is a productive workforce. We have that better than anybody else in the world. How badly do you have to treat people to make them leave that behind? To make them want to leave that infrastructure and that labor force behind and go to China, of all places? To leave the United States of America and go, of all places. Remember, when the most important thing to them is infrastructure and labor force, to go, of all places, to China. How badly do you have to treat them to make them want to do that? What if you erased this incentive to flee? And gave them instead an incentive to come. You want to talk about an explosively expansive tax base? Forget about all the benefits that we've talked about, where you tax all the illegal income that's made in the United States, where you're taxing all the tourists, where you're taxing all those people that are getting paid untaxed money. Because you tax them now when they spend it instead of when they make it. Forget about all that tax base expansion. You're going to talk about millions and millions and millions of new employees. You want to talk about an explosively expansive tax base? So, yeah, you bring on your flat tax, huh? You bring on your property tax. You bring on all of these other replacements for the current tax code that you can throw out there, and you show me that kind of economic, you show me that kind of incentive in your tax plan for businesses to expand and to come to the United States of America. You show me those incentives. You show me that economic expansion as a result, as a function of your tax proposal. Oh, no, we don't know that's going to happen. It's never been tried before. Exactly. Thank you very much. It's never been tried before. I mean, we can sit here and talk about it, and we know it's going to happen. But thank you very much. We've never tried that before, have we? We're going to take one more break. We're going to come back. We're going to call it a wrap for tonight unless we get some calls at 347-677-1835. I knew everywhere you go and the guilt you feel, the weary soul.
conflict in every human heart, between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And it does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the household, then we start making better investments.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.